It is Wednesday, March the 18th, and this is Kathy bringing you the News Gazette for today. Headline reads, Coronavirus Response Postponed. U of I commencement put on hold, an outcome we had hoped to avoid. No face-to-face classes, no sports, and now no May commencement ceremony at University of Illinois campuses. Administrators broke the news Tuesday, calling off scheduled ceremonies in Urbana, Chicago, and Springfield. Instead, diplomas will be mailed, and we are exploring possible alternatives such as rescheduling and or hosting virtual events to honor the class of 2020, they wrote in a mass mail, citing new CDC guidelines that made the turnaround too tight to plan for. We are proud of your sacrifice and your success, class of 2020, the administrators wrote, and we promise we will find ways to honor your achievements. Rest assured, teachers and employees on district payrolls will be compensated during the two-week shutdown, as if schools were functioning normally, Governor J.B. Pritzker vowed. Added to the lengthy list of closings and cancellations Tuesday, Allerton Park and Retreat Center until further noticed, Sunday receptions in Rantoul honoring the Tuskegee Airmen, and Saturday's Market in the Square in Urbana. Champaign County, Christie sets up a testing tent, 7 more residents cleared. Christie Clinic is moving coronavirus testing outdoors. The clinic has set up a tented drive-through coronavirus testing area behind its facility at 1801 West Windsor Road in Champaign. Christie patients approved for testing will be directed there, according to Christie spokeswoman Melissa Topovich. Patients are being asked to call a new Christie COVID-19 hotline at 217-366-4070. That's 366-4070 to be screened on the phone in advance, rather than going directly to the testing area on their own, she said. Patients will be tested either inside the drive-through or, if they need to be further evaluated, will be examined in a portable exam room right next to the new drive-in. This new drive-through testing area was being set up on Tuesday, just ahead of the Illinois Department of Public Health's announcement that the total number of COVID-19 cases in the state had climbed to 160, and the state's first COVID-19 death had occurred, a Chicago woman in her 60s. The state also announced its first outbreak at a long-term care facility in DuPage County involving 21 cases, 17 residents, and 4 staff members. Champaign County continued to have a single COVID-19 case on Tuesday, and no new cases were reported by the state in surrounding East Central Illinois counties. Results from pending COVID-19 tests continue to trickle in. Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride said 7 more of Champaign County's pending tests came back negative Tuesday, following 13 negatives the day before. Carle Foundation Hospital halted its centennial surveillance testing of emergency room patients for COVID-19 on Tuesday. The state is prioritizing testing for people with suspected exposures, according to Carle spokeswoman Jamie Mullen. Flooded with calls and visits related to the virus, local health care providers began launching new phone and digital options to help screen patients, answer their questions, and direct them to assistance faster. In addition to Christie Clinic's new hotline, Carle launched a new online risk assessment for the coronavirus at carle.org/home/COVID-19-screening. Carle said the tool includes the same questions being asked when patients are screened in person, and it responds with guidance on how, where, or if a patient should seek care. Carle also launched a dedicated COVID-19 patient hotline to answer questions. Patients who want to access that should call 902-6100 and press 1. OSF Healthcare, which owns OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center in Urbana and OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville, have launched Claire, a virtual assistant chatbot at osfhealthcare.org to help educate the public about COVID-19. Patients with symptoms can also use this tool to be screened and referred to care. OSF also has a new text messaging information tool, OSF COVID Companion, to guide the public and send updates to their phones. To subscribe, text OSF at 67634. That's 67634. OSF further has launched a new COVID-19 nurse hotline that is being staffed around the clock. It can be reached at 833-673-5669. Then looking at in the area roundup absence of election judges by Deb Pressey. This is in reference to yesterday's voting time. Fear of the coronavirus didn't deter early voting in Champaign County, but it did keep many election judges away on Election Day. We had unprecedented cancellations of election judges due to COVID-19 concerns. Both our senior judges and our veterans, said Champaign County Chief Deputy Clerk Angela Patton. We normally have cancellations, but this was on another scale and we had to consolidate polling locations. Many voters cast their ballots early. In Champaign County, there was a steady flow of voters throughout the early voting period, which ended Monday, with the unofficial total being 13,235 ballots cast ahead of Election Day in person and another 2,064 votes by mail processed, Patton said. Cancellations by election judges posed a lot of unprecedented challenges, she said. But everyone has remained positive and patient, and for that we are grateful, she said. We had lots of volunteers to help make phone calls, run supplies, and help with cleaning, disinfecting efforts. Elsewhere around the area, Election Day turnout in Vermilion County, where a 1% school facility sales tax increase headlined the ballot, was a bit heavier than expected, according to County Clerk Kathy Jenkins. Election judges were wiping down surfaces, she said, and nobody was making an issue of COVID-19. Between 850 to 1,000 Vermilion County residents voted early, either in person or by mail, Jenkins said. The county also had some election judge cancellations, but with schools closed, those openings were filled by student election judge volunteers who stepped up, she said. Voting was slow in Piatt County Tuesday, according to County Clerk Jennifer Harper. Piatt was also dealing with a lot of election judge cancellations, she said. Douglas County Clerk and Recorder Judy Pollack said early voting was busy in the week running up to Election Day, and the turnout Tuesday was better than expected. There were sanitation kits at every precinct with supplies for wiping down pens, ballot covers, and other surfaces, she said. Some voters wanted to use their own pens, and some wore gloves, she said. And this headline on the front page is, "Quite a night for Sullivan and board upstarts." Champaign County went for Bernie. Illinois preferred Biden. In a repeat of 2016, Bernie Sanders was the choice of Democratic primary voters in Champaign County. The winning margin was 11,676 to 10,879, but lost handily statewide Tuesday. 4 years ago, it was to eventual nominee Hillary Clinton. This year, it was to the surging Joe Biden. The one big difference between then and now, voter turnout. In Champaign County, where the coronavirus pandemic has hogged the headlines for a week, just 32,086 primary votes were cast, down from a record 59,003 in the same election 4 years earlier. Other big winners Tuesday. Ramona Sullivan, who emerged from a field of four Democrats running for Champaign County resident judge, winning the closest call of the night, 8,967 to 8,819 over runner-up Ruth Wyman. The Democratic Champaign County Board challengers, who went a combined 4-for-4 against incumbents, with Emily Rodriguez routing Chairman Geraldo Rosales, 857 to 185 in District 8. Also cruising, Deshaun Williams, 6, Jennifer Straub, 9, and Mary King, 10. Democrat Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan, who'll get a second crack at U.S. Representative Rodney Davis's 13th district seat, which she lost in a photo finish in 2018. Oakland Republican Mary Miller and Mattoon Democrat Erica Weaver will square off for John Shimkus's 15th congressional district seat. Republican Sarah Perry, Piatt County's next attorney, and circuit clerk winners Nathan Burton from Douglas and Camelin Johnson Anderson of Ford. Susan McGrath, who will represent the Democrats in November's Champaign County circuit clerk race. Opponents of a 1% sales tax hike in Vermilion County. The final count, 6,392 no's, 5,555 yeses. And Jim Day's column, "The New Abnormal, Dispatches from the Apocalypse." Business shortly after noon Tuesday appeared slow at the City of Champaign 20 polling place, located at Grace Lutheran Church. 6 hours plus after the polling place opened, just 118 of 966 registered voters had cast ballots in the area. Election Judge Michael Martin said there was a steady flow of voters, but fears about the coronavirus pandemic had thrown everything off. While the numbers appear lower than usual, there were voters who were determined to cast their ballots. One couple, she was using a steerable knee scooter to get around because of recent ligament surgery, and he was wearing blue rubber gloves, labored to get into the building. After voting, Wally Lotz used hand sanitizer to ward off potential maladies, jovially announcing that he was washing my hands of the whole process. Asked whether she was concerned about the coronavirus, voter Christina Miller said yes and no. Yes, because she spent part of Monday at the hospital with her mother for an unrelated illness. No, because as a University of employee, I am working from home. Business at the polls may have been steady, but it still was slow. Just how slow, to be determined by the final numbers. But it served as a metaphor for the lumbering pace of life locally in the aftermath of Governor J.B. Pritzker's decision to call daily life as people know it to a halt out of an abundance of caution. A drive down South Neal Street in Champaign revealed one restaurant after another with few vehicles, if any, in their parking lots. Whatever business was being done in the drive-through lanes. Bars, too, are closed. Still, apparently people have to drink. Inside Harvest Market grocery store, employees of an out-of-town distributor were laying in extra cases of beer and non-alcoholic beverages to meet new demand, 500 cases rather than the usual 300 to 400. One distributor employee joked that people are afraid the world is coming to an end, so they want to have enough to drink. If Tuesday was a good business day for taking care of grocery stores, today, the designated day for supplying bars and restaurants, will be slow, he predicted. Life inside Harvest Market appeared normal, but owing to stepped-up activities to make customers feel comfortable, it's different. The business has made hand sanitizers and gloves available to customers and employees alike, and closed down its in-store restaurant and coffee shop. At the same time, it's changed some packaging, implemented new early morning shopping hours for seniors, 6 to 7 a.m., and scheduled cleaning for every 20 to 30 minutes with hospital-grade disinfectant. We're wiping down everything, said Donna Wright, the store's operations manager. We have upped the ante. Just as in-store circumstances are different, so is Harvest Market's online shopping program for both pickup and delivery. It's increased by 3 times what it was before the pandemic. Michael's Catering, also in the food business, but a different kind. It's been creamed by a loss of business. Co-owner Whiteley Ackerman said roughly 60 catering events have been canceled, and a business with 25 full and part-time employees has been reduced to about 4. She said the only bright spot is that businesses whose employees can't go out for lunch are ordering box lunches for the office so they can grab and go. Ackerman said Michael's is focusing on how to meet different kinds of customer wants, more deliveries, and reviewing options for financial assistance through the government's Small Business Administration. The obvious fact is that everyone is affected by the disruption of their daily routines, some more adversely than others, but nonetheless all one way or another. For example, members of a Women's Alcoholics Anonymous group were scheduled to meet Tuesday at Grace Lutheran, but the gathering was canceled, apparently out of concern over the coronavirus. We are working to create a phone-in meeting. Let's stay connected, stated a notice posted on the church door. For election headlines, Londrigan and Davis headed for a rematch. Miller and Weaver facing off for Jim Shimkus' seat. Democrat Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan will again be facing Republican incumbent Rodney Davis this fall to represent the 13th District of Illinois. Londrigan, a professional fundraiser from Springfield, defeated political newcomer Stephanie Smith of Urbana with more than 75% of the vote to win the Democratic nomination. Davis of Taylorville ran unopposed. In a heated election 2 years ago, Davis defeated Londrigan by less than 3,000 votes to represent the 13th District, which stretches from Edwardsville on the southwest to Champaign and Bloomington on the northeast. For the rematch this fall, through the end of February, Davis had $1.26 million on hand, according to the Federal Election Commission, a bit less than Londrigan's $1.33 million. And in the 15th District, which covers much of southeastern Illinois, from Collinsville to Danville, Democrat Erica Weaver and Republican Mary Miller will compete to replace the seat long held by retiring Representative John Shimkus, Republican of Collinsville. Miller, who received high-profile endorsements from the likes of U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, a Republican of Texas, and the Illinois Farm Bureau, nearly 60% of the vote in her primary contest, defeating Vermilion County Treasurer and former Darren Duncan, who got a little over 20%, and 2 other challengers. These individuals who supported my campaign are conservative, God-fearing residents of the Illinois 15th District, and I can't thank them enough, said Miller, a Coles County cattle farmer, who will join her husband, State Representative Chris Miller, Republican of Oakland, in politics if she wins in November. Weaver, a Mattoon school board member who works in the Coles County Public Defender's Office, got about 51% of the roll in her vote in her primary, defeating 3 other candidates, including Kevin Gaither, who unsuccessfully challenged Shimkus in 2018 and got about 23% of the vote on Tuesday. Shimkus told WDWS he expects the district which he won in the 2018 election with 71% of the vote to go Republican in November. I fully believe that whoever wins the Republican primary, it's a very Republican and very conservative district, will win the general election, he said, before results came in. And so whoever puts together the best team to win the primary and the finances to do that should do well in November. Another election article. Sullivan edges Wyman to earn the Democratic nod, by Mary Schenck. Champaign County will have a female circuit judge on the bench come December 1st, as voters narrowly approved Ramona Sullivan as the Democratic candidate to take on Republican Sherry Kessler for a resident judgeship. Sullivan of Savoy, who has been an attorney for 24 years, eked out a win over her closest competitor, Urbana attorney Ruth Wyman, by 148 votes. When the final count was revealed about 9:45 p.m., Sullivan had 8,967 votes to Wyman's 8,819. It was really hard work, and I'm grateful for each and every vote, said an ecstatic Sullivan, who watched the returns on a computer at her Savoy home with her husband, Anthony Ortega, and two of her three children. Both Sullivan and Wyman left their male competitors, Troy Lozar and David Moore, in the dust, outdistancing them by a more than 5-to-1 margin. Lozar netted 1,707 votes, and Moore was a mere 8 behind him at 1,699. Sullivan said that with the coronavirus pandemic that has swept Illinois, she did none of the last-minute campaigning she had planned for in the home stretch. I didn't talk to voters or host events, but I put hangers on doors. It seemed like the safest way not to risk anyone's health. I'm excited and so grateful. The 49-year-old Sullivan ran for a circuit-wide judgeship in 2018. She won Champaign County, which swept Democrats into all the countywide offices, but was defeated in the five other counties of the Sixth Circuit by Republican Roger Weber. A native of Edgar County, Sullivan graduated from the University of Illinois in 1993 and the U of I College of Law in 1996. She's been a legal aid attorney almost her entire legal career, but for a couple of years in private practice. For the past 8 years, she's been an assistant public defender in Champaign County. Prior to that, she worked at Land of Lincoln Legal Assistance in Champaign for 14 years. She campaigned on bringing balance to the bench, saying Champaign County was long overdue for a judge whose life experience more closely mirrors that of the people coming through the front door. She referred to her own stint as a single mother after being widowed many years ago, and she was also clear that it was time for another woman in the circuit judgeship. Judge Heidi Ladd, who plans to retire in July, has been the only female circuit judge in Champaign County since 2004. Rhonda Holeman and Anna Benjamin currently serve as associate judges, having been appointed to their posts in August 2015 and December 2017, respectively. Sullivan applied for both of their jobs, as well as about 10 other open associate and circuit judgeships in the last 8 years, but was passed over for appointment. In a poll of lawyers released last month, she was recommended for office, while both Wyman and Kessler were not recommended for the bench by their colleagues. Wyman has been an attorney for just under 16 years with the general practice. She currently has an office in Urbana and has been recognized for her pro bono work. She served on the Urbana City Council for 8 years. Lozar has been an attorney for 23 years and an assistant Champaign County State's attorney since 2004. Moore had the most legal experience of the four candidates with 36 years under his belt, all of them in Urbana in a broad-based general practice. When either Sullivan or Kessler takes the bench, she will be the only elected female judge in Champaign County, earning more than $202,000 annually. And in Piatt County, Perry will likely be the new lead prosecutor by Steve Hoffman. Barring independent or Democratic candidates being added to the general election ballot, Republican Sarah Perry will be the new state's attorney for Piatt County beginning December 1st. Unofficial primary results showed Perry netting 1,139 votes on Tuesday, or 55.75%, to fellow Republican Kelly Griffith's 904 votes, or 44.25%. I'm very excited, very grateful. It's humbling, but very exciting. A lot of people helped me over the last few months, and I am grateful, said Perry, a Monticello High School graduate who has worked for the Champaign County State's Attorney's Office since 2013. She will likely take over for longtime state's attorney Dana Rhodes, who has held the position since 2008. Rhodes opted not to run for a fourth term in order to pursue a resident circuit judge opening. Perry said she is looking forward to getting the county government back on track after a turbulent 6 months that have included dissension over a budget deficit and its county board chairman being arrested on some forgery and official misconduct charges. "I am looking most forward to getting things on track. There's been a lot of craziness, a lot going on in the county, and I hope to get things moving forward," Perry said. Griffith, general counsel for the Illinois Law Enforcement Training and Standards Board, earned her law degree from the University of Illinois. Voter turnout was 28.25% in Piatt County, with 3,422 of 112,115 registered voters casting ballots. Okay, and looking at some local news. Coronavirus response. What to do? Exercise a winning strategy. Experts doing so in Fresh Air, an even better idea by Deborah Pressey. Wondering if you should keep up with your fitness routine in the midst of a coronavirus pandemic? Yes, you should, with some precautions, and it may even help you fight off this virus, according to University of Illinois Kinesiology and Community Health professors Wimo Zhu and Jeffrey Woods, also the co-author of a book and exercise video entitled Exercise Against Coronavirus, recently published in China. Zhu said that regular exercise can help strengthen your immune system and reduce the unhealthy stress that comes with living through a pandemic. Moderate intensity endurance exercise has been shown to improve immune responses, Woods said. For example, we did a study where we had older adults, a high-risk group for COVID-19, perform 10 months of moderate endurance exercise, and we found that they had an improved response to the influenza vaccine. People in the exercise group had longer vaccine protection. Others have also shown that endurance exercise can improve vaccine responses. While there isn't a current vaccine for the virus that causes COVID-19, Woods said, we can infer from this study that exercise might improve the immune response to it. Those who exercise regularly should continue their routine, Zeus advised. Focus on moderate exercise to get your heart rate up and break a sweat, he said. Ideally, include a warm-up and an aerobic exercise, and consider also doing activities that can promote relaxation and reduce stress, such as yoga and Tai Chi, Zeus said. For those out of shape, he said, I think walking is the best. You don't need any equipment, and you can do it anywhere. If you're sedentary and want to start exercising now, begin at lower intensities and durations and build up slowly, Woods advised. Don't overdo the workout, he and Zhu warned. The caveat is that there is also evidence that intense, prolonged endurance exercise can be detrimental to immunity, particularly if you are unaccustomed to it, Woods said. Less is known about strength training, but it appears not to increase risk if performed moderately, he said. Practically speaking, if you exercise regularly, it is safe to continue to do so, but be sure you follow good public health hygiene practices, including cleaning any public exercise equipment before and after use. For anyone at elevated risk for COVID-19, such as older adults and those with chronic health conditions, consider avoiding public exercise facilities for now and finding other options for getting exercise, Woods suggested. If you move your exercise outdoors, you can also take advantage of fresh air and sounds of nature to help relieve stress, Woods said. Exercising outdoors also means more exposure to sunshine, he said, therefore vitamin D, which has been found important to maintain one's immune function. How about continuing to exercise if you become ill? As long as your illness is mild and you're not experiencing severe symptoms such as trouble breathing, it's likely okay to continue exercising, according to Zhu. Around town. He's not parking it here, he's using a lot to work out, by Colin Linkus. Aaron Walker's workout equipment wasn't spread across part of an otherwise empty parking lot on Tuesday afternoon just because the ongoing coronavirus pandemic is affecting facilities such as gyms. Quote, silver lining, it happened when the sun's out and it's above 20 below, the 41-year-old car salesman said, between sets of high-intensity interval training. So we can work out outside. Otherwise, I'd be in the basement. This is Walker's go-to workout spot, a black top at the south end of Centennial Park. It's located not far from Centennial High School campus that lacked students Tuesday because of a coronavirus-related shutdown. He's been bringing his gear here for 5, maybe 6 years, by his estimation. The reason? Unless it's brutally cold, he'd rather be outdoors than in the confines of a traditional gym. When I jump rope, I like to put my shades on and close my eyes, Walker said. There's usually nobody here until the kids play baseball. I can close my eyes and twirl and dance and do all kinds of stuff. The only other thing in the parking lot Tuesday was Walker's black car, which hosts a small radio speaker on its roof. Music by Bob Marley is a must, according to Walker, who typically keeps up a training session until his chewing gum loses all flavor. His circuit includes a farmer's walk with two adjustable dumbbells that go up to 55 pounds apiece, as well as pull-ups and leg lifts with the TRX suspension straps. It also incorporates a large exercise ball, push-up stands, and a jump rope, among other items. "I'll spend a couple of minutes at each section," Walker said. "I've got pretty much everything I need." That includes a picnic table resting halfway in the parking lot and branded with the Champaign Park District logo. The table formerly sat directly underneath a large, well-placed tree branch from which Walker hung his suspension straps. "One day they came and chopped the branch off. I'm like, why'd they chop the branch?" The only other issue Walker sometimes faces on the blacktop occurs during baseball season, as the parking lot resides in the first baseline foul territory of a youth diamond. "Only once I got hit," Walker said. "I remember I was jump roping, standing here, and I came over, and in slow motion I was like, no! It got my car. I didn't catch it, I'm not going to lie. I kind of hit the baseball, and it just went off my car." Other than that, the 8-year Champaign resident has experienced smooth sailing with his unique workout location, and he's open to others utilizing it. "Anyone's welcome to come," Walker said. "I see people jogging by. People are welcome to come do HIIT training if they want." From Capital News, Illinois, stop buying more than you need. Leaders press shoppers to stop hoarding items. From Springfield. As store shelves across Illinois empty of key products during the COVID-19 pandemic, public and private sector leaders are urging shoppers to put less stress on the supply chain by not hoarding things. Since the pandemic intensified in Illinois last week, customers have been panic buying and hoarding products like toilet paper, tissues, hand sanitizer, bread, and pasta. Signs posted on cleaned-out shelves ask customers to limit their purchases of such high-demand items to a few or even one. But perceived shortages of products are being caused not by lack of supply, but by a panic demand. This is an entirely self-created problem, said Rob Carr, president and CEO of the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. There's no shortage. There's no need for hoarding. There's no thoughts of closing grocery stores. Just stick to your normal patterns, and there will be plenty for everyone. Illinois Emergency Management Agency Director Alicia Tate Nadeau echoed those concerns. "There's no need to purchase dozens of packages of toilet paper at any one time," she said. "Let me be clear. Hoarding is irresponsible. Please be considerate with others." Tate Nadeau added that when people hoard food and supplies, they are hurting the most vulnerable neighbors. "Please stop buying more than you need." While restaurants and bars are closed to dine-in customers, grocery stores, pharmacies, gas stations, and stores that sell cleaning supplies and pet supplies and electronics remain open. "They're worn out, but they're working hard. They're rising to the challenge," Carr said of store workers. "They're working 24/7 to replenish their stores and keep their stores clean to meet the needs." Despite the tremendous stress, Carr said, panic buying and hoarding has put on inventories, he said supply chains continue to work normally. "There's absolutely nothing deficient about the supply chain. It's working. In fact, it is answering the call, but we would not have to be taking these extraordinary measures if people would shop normally." Illinois' largest group of manufacturers said the same thing about the flow of products from producer to seller. "It's important for Illinoisans to remain calm and understand that the food supply chain remains strong and robust." Overtime opportunities. Carr said he's working with the Illinois Department of Labor to suspend the state's one-day rest and seven act, which requires workers to have at least 24 hours of rest every week so that willing employees can work longer hours at distribution centers if they want to get overtime. He's also working with municipalities to suspend overnight delivery restrictions. And that's all we have time for today. I'll be back in a couple of minutes with part two of the News Gazette for Wednesday, March 18th.